Hello.
Hi, Paul. It's Leon.
Oh, hi, Leon. Is this the recorded call? You rang me on the number I gave you this morning.
I believe so. Yes.
Good. Good. Okay. Let's pile straight into it then. I'm Paul Scott. I've got Leon Boris with me again on the 9th of October 2015. It's almost a year since I last spoke to Leon. So what we thought we'd do, today we're very time limited, so we just thought we'd run through five specific stocks that Leon thinks look interesting at the moment. Disclaimers, we're not giving financial advice, none of these are recommendations, and these audio casts are purely for entertainment and general information. So, okay Leon, which one do you want to start with?
Shall we kick off with Bioventix?
Yeah, no, you are really the expert in this one, aren't you? This was your big pick last year when we did our audio class. You were extremely bullish on it. I've just read back the the notes, the transcript, which is on my new website, qualitysmallcaps.co.uk. And you've been proven spectacularly correct. It's up, what, is it 50-60% since then, something like that?
I think it was 6.50 when we last spoke, and now it's around £11.
Yeah, amazing.
It's done rather well.
It has. So the ticket is B, Bravo,
Victor,
X-ray, Papa, isn't it? Yeah. Market cap's about 55 million. So off you go, Leon, update us.
Okay, well, the company recently announced its results for 2015, ending June the 30th. And they were very good. Earnings per share came in at around 50p. When we spoke a year ago, brokers had just upgraded their forecast for the year 2015 from about 37p to 42 pence. And then about a month ago, the company announced that it thought it'd done rather better than market expectations and came out with a revenue forecast of around 4.2 million, which turned into an actual of 4.3. But there was a big move up in the shares when that announcement was made, from around £9 to £11. So the company is now sitting on a forward PE of around 20 or 21, depending on whose forecasts you are minded to take as being accurate.
Who's covering it now, broker-wise, Leon?
It's just still limited to ThinCap. They've been very cautious, as they were last time. I think they probably take their lead from Peter Harrison, who's the CEO of Bioventix. They like to under-promise and over-deliver. It can be frustrating at times because the story sometimes doesn't hang together as to why revenues and profits are only going to increase modestly. So I think the forecast that ThinCap have suggests that earnings per share will rise to around 53.5p in the year ending June 16. That's a very modest increase on the back of a sub 5% increase in revenues. The problem is that in the last half of the year, revenues went up 31% and EPS was up nearly 50% if you compare it to the comparative period a year ago. So there's a slight mismatch there, or a big mismatch between the under-promising and the kind of extrapolation of very recent events. And, of course, in a royalty business such as Bioventix, you can extrapolate with more confidence than you could do in a typical business.
So what's the upshot of that, Leon? Are you saying the 53p forecast now is too low?
I think it's too low. I think that...
What do you reckon it might be then, 60p?
Yeah, 60 plus. I mean, I'm thinking 62, 63p. And one of the kind of concrete reasons I can give for that is that this March 2015, one of the biggest players introduced their vitamin D test. And you might remember from the call last time, vitamin D has played a very key role in driving revenues in the last and profits in the last few years. Beckman called for a top five diagnostic company, and they launched in March. They've got FDA approval, I believe, in Jan of this year.
Are they a distributor of the product then, or something?
Yeah, they're one of the top five distributors. They have these big machines in hospitals which test blood, and they operate a whole lot of different tests on the one machine at the same time.
And Bioventic supply a consumable
they,
for that machine?
No, they're quite different. Bioventic supply an antibody, which is highly sensitive, and most of the antibodies that are produced for these diagnostic tests are based upon mice technology. And you might recall that in the case of Bioventix, they use sheep. It's a larger mammal, and it produces much better, much more sensitive results. And in fact, almost...
So that's incorporated into a test.
Most of the diagnostic companies have failed to produce a good vitamin D test. And as a result, Bioventix have been able to license their particular antibody to 16 different companies, ranging from the very big, Beckman Coulter, to some of the smaller players and some of the emerging diagnostic companies in Asia. Now, of those 16 that have been licensed, around 8 or 9 have reached market, with more to come. But where they have reached the market, they've only maybe just gone into the US market and they're yet to come to the European market. So there's a lot more opportunity. But going back to the Beckman Coulter point, that they during a management meeting I had on Monday or Tuesday of this week with Peter, he indicated that of the £800,000 growth in royalty revenues attributable to vitamin D, sorry, the £600,000 increase this year, approximately half of that came from Beckman Coulter, but Beckman Coulter only came on board in March of this year. So you can see that the run rate is high, and I'm very confident that we're going to see those forecasts beaten. It's a tricky thing, though. You know, trying to I think under-promising over-delivering is a very worthy goal, and I think more managers should do it. But they've got to make sure their base case makes sense, and I don't think
realistic. You don't want people wildly under-forecasting just as much as over-forecasting, do you?
But it does provide an opportunity, though, for the canny investor who's done the research to see opportunity there and to do their own numbers and try and anticipate where we might be. So it's good fun.
Okay, that's really interesting. I mean, this stock, I noticed when we first saw it, I mean, I went to that meeting that I think you did where Gervais from Mitan talked about
that's
it.
That's right.
At the time, I think it was on PE of 12. Now, obviously, it's re-rated to a PE of 20, and I appreciate that PEs are not always that relevant for growth stocks, or I think super stocks, as you described this one in our last interview. But there's no denying it had a bit of, well, it's had a very significant re-rating, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, as earnings rising. So, I mean, isn't that a bit of a one-off? You know, are we not now going to stay on a PE of 20 and we'll just have earnings growth? Or do you think the PE could stretch further?
I mean, I think it's fair to say you've had that, you've had effectively a doubling of the multiple. I think the shares are trading at 260. I bought shares at that price, and I seem to remember a multiple, or maybe it was a forward multiple. I was looking at around 10 at that time. Now we're at 20. So you've probably lost that particular benefit.
Elements, yes.
That said, diagnostic companies abroad on markets, much bigger ones, you know, trade on often multiples up to 30. And, you know, a company that can generate quality earnings, and in this case, you know, the operating margins, as we discussed before, are over 65%. In fact, I think they're now over 70%. Very high returns on capital and assets. Very high payout ratio. I think, you know, you can certainly justify a multiple of more. In fact, the company's on a forecast dividend yield of around 3.5,
which is still pretty good for a
small cap company. So there might be some more growth in the multiple, but I think, you know, just if you look at the potential growth in the EPS, you know, that on itself is interesting. You know, I'm sensing that, you know, we'll probably see growth of 15-20% compound growth over the next 2 years, probably more this year and a bit slower next year. But the key development in the year ending 18 will be the launch of troponin, a high-sensitive troponin test. It was in the BBC News yesterday and got a lot of coverage. It was a test done by Edinburgh University on the performance of these high-sensitive troponin tests. And these are tests, it's the most widely used diagnostic in the world. it's used to test whether somebody's had a heart attack. And the ones that use that are highly sensitive, are accurate to over 99% degree. Now, historically, these tests have tended to underreport whether someone's had a heart attack if you're outside the typical age range, or if you're an ethnic minority, or if you're female. And for that reason, the US have been quite careful, the FDA have been quite careful about approving these new high sensitive tests. In fact, none have been given FDA approval yet, but they're subject to field trials, and certainly that's the case for BioNTech, who've teamed up with a big five diagnostic firm, and who that firm should be in a position to launch in Europe probably in 16 and in, or 16 stroke 17, and hopefully get FDA clearance in 17-18 for a launch in the US. And, you know, this is a $1.2 billion business, and growing at around 12% per annum. And I don't know what market share BioNTech's partner would hope to take, maybe anywhere between 5 and 15%. I don't know. I'm guessing on that. But what I do know is that BioNTech were entitled to a 2% royalty on those sales.
Nice. So how does that work out in terms of what it might do to BioNTech's earnings? Are we looking at something that's going to be icing on the cake, or something that's going to be transformational?
Very significant. So, you know, on those metrics I've just given you, if you take a 15% market share, you know, and I know that it's a top five player, so 15%, you know, it's probably not unrealistic. This on its own could add around 45p of earnings per share. Now, it's significant. You know, if however they only have a 5% market share, you can do the math. We're looking at a 15% per annum earnings per share increase, and then further growth of 12% thereafter, if you believe the global forecast for this. But also, we might see the market expand if his old tests, which have been around now for 15, 20 years, if they're less effective, maybe they're not used as widely, maybe the new tests will increase the market. And of course, as countries become more affluent and the risk of heart disease and heart attacks increases, one would expect to see this particular diagnostic being used, you know, increasingly, and maybe the run rate at 12%, you know, possibly understates the case. I don't know. That's supposition and guesswork, really. But you can begin to think of where this company could move. You know, they've got continuing growth in vitamin D over the next two or 3 years. Management describes it as modest. I think it'll be more significant. And then you've got troponin, which, according to FinCap, they said in their broker's note in May, they thought the troponin would be bigger than all the other companies' revenues combined. So they saw it as a very significant opportunity. And of course, in a royalties business, all of that drops through to the bottom line.
But that would be over quite a few years out.
You're looking at 4 or 5 years. But I suppose my view is I reckon it's a relatively safe, you know, kind of 20% EPS growth business over the next 5 years. You know, with relatively little downside. So I think the PE of 20 holds. And I think you can get the EPS growth, and I think the investors will do well. It's not a recommendation. Please, you know, do your own research and dig into it. I haven't got all the answers. I may have missed risks. I probably have. But, you know, I still think it's an excellent opportunity. And although the price is high, I still think it's a great opportunity.
Okay. So have you top-sliced your personal hobbies? It was your biggest holding, wasn't it?
No, I haven't sold a single share. So I bought it at 264.30, 657 and £8 was my last purchase.
Wow. And it's now 11.15, I think, isn't it?
I mean, we explained last time, you know, I like buying into strength. You know, and if it's being reinforced, if the evidence in terms of performance is continuing to be there, then I'm happy to continue to hold, albeit that it's now becoming probably a too bigger part of my overall portfolio.
Okay, no, that's brilliant, Leon. Well, well done again. Fantastic to see it work out so well for you, and I long may it continue. We better move on because of time constraints. Should we do Ready Next?
Okay,
ticker REDD.
Yes.
Market cap $455 million, currently £1.58 per share.
So investors might remember this was the previously called Helphire, And it provides, it does two things. It historically provided cars for people involved in no-fault accident claims. So it will make an assessment on whether the person had caused the accident. If they hadn't, they, under an insurance policy, they'd provide the car and try and make money from that, and then try and settle the claim. That business got into a lot of trouble under previous management, who took on too much. They took too much risk. They took on too many claims that went bad. And you'll remember it from 2 or 3 years ago, when it was sort of owed a lot of money from insurance companies to where they were struggling to settle. New management came in. I met them about 3 years ago. At that time, it looked as if the company might be going into receivership.
Well, I know. They did an amazing deal to get a large chunk of bank debt actually written off, effectively,
which
didn't they?
Really
rare.
Which
is astonishing.
Yeah, very rare.
I'd
been down to their AGM, and I'd met management, and even though there were a lot of risks at the time, I just thought they were outstanding and very conservative, which is something I quite like in management, and I thought they were worth backing up. Put some money in them, but most of it came in after they did that remarkable debt for equity deal. And
yes,
you know, as you know and I know, that if you've been around in the equity markets for any length of time, it's very rare to see that kind of deal. It's much more common to see equity being completely wiped out by the debt providers. So that was an encouraging start. And then since then, the company has consolidated its shares. I think I was buying in at 3p, so 30p in new money.
I bought in around the same level, actually. Yeah. I paid 3.3p.
So it's been a great story. Now, of course, it's at 159. It's paid very generous dividends en route, and the company is doing very well. And about a year and a half ago, they raised around $60 million from memory for acquisitions. They announced one pretty quickly, and then they announced one more recently. And they've moved themselves into legal services, and that so the most recent acquisition is a company called FMG Group. Now, you know, this is an area where you can buy relatively cheaply, and if you're trading on high multiples, you know, these deals can be very accretive. And with the deregulation that's taken place in the provision of legal services, it's now common for companies to be able, on public markets, to be able to run these kinds of businesses. And there are other examples. Gately is one. That's
Fairpoint.
And Fairpoint is another, which has had a remarkable run as well. So I think, you know, on a kind of PE basis, they're looking pricey, ready, and, you know, I know that they've got tax losses, very significant tax losses, which flatter the
I remember covering that in my Corporate Value report. The PE was actually mid-20s at the time, if you adjust for the tax losses.
I think it's come down.
I think the earnings forecasts, I noticed, have risen in recent months from 7p to 9p. So it is growing, the earnings are growing into the valuation, actually, aren't they?
I think so. But, you know, I think when I looked at it a few months back, they had about 4 years worth of tax losses left. So, you know, on the Stockopedia, they're forecasting in 17 EPS of around 9.3, giving a PE ratio of 17. So that's high.
Which is not outrageous. It's high, but it's not outrageously high, is it? And also, I noticed the forward dividend yield is still very good. 5.5% dividend yield this year, 6% next year. It seems to pay out all of its earnings as dividends.
And I love that. I love that in a company. It's part of the reason why I quite like, you know, property REITs, because, you know, you can't sit on cash. And if you're committing to pay out all of your profits as cash, then it means that those profit figures are likely to be accurate, because otherwise, you know, you would never be able to claim a big number, and then you never have the cash to back it up. So I really like the fact that this company has been able to pay out. And that says something for its model, that it's clearly in a position to do that. You've got to obviously keep a keen eye on any build-up of debt, because obviously what you don't want to see is a company that's funding a big dividend on the back of increasing debt.
Yeah.
But I've seen no evidence of that so far. I'm going to the AGM on the 29th of October. I want to find out more about this most recent acquisition, which seemed to be, at face value, quite pricey. So slightly different to the first acquisition that they did, and I want to try and establish what kind of, you know, why they paid that kind of money, what kind of growth prospects it's got, and where they see the business going forward. But so for me, this is very much a hold. I wouldn't call it a buy. And I think, you know, further work.
You personally, obviously, we're not giving advice. That's just,
yeah, of course, personally.
Yeah. I mean, I got this one wrong. I was in at 30p old money, out at £1.30, so I made a nice turn on it. But I've been saying for a while now, it looks fully valued.
Yeah.
But it's actually sort of, it's growing into the, you know, I wouldn't say it's wildly overvalued.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's overvalued at all. It probably looks about right now, actually, funnily enough.
Yeah, I think it's about right. I mean, I topped right from it. At 1.30 as well, so I've sold about a third of my holding.
Yes.
Sorry.
Do you think they've benefited from Quindel's problems? Are they picking up business maybe from that, the weakness of Quindel, do you think?
Excellent question. I've just jotted it down. I'm going to be asking it on the 29th.
Great. Would you come back and do maybe a 5 or 10 minute audio cast?
Yeah, happy to do that.
Because I'm trying to sort of allocate particular stocks to particular people in my network, and you're the expert on Bioventix now already, and
well,
a few others as well.
I'd probably say I know more about Bioventix than Reddy, but nonetheless, yeah, I'd be happy to come back. And I mean,
Brilliant.
I think the reason for why I wanted to talk about Reddy was just really the importance of management and having confidence in management, and the kind of, you know, and Reddy and Bioventix both benefit from having understated, quite sensible guys running it who you know, are not going to bet the company on it. And, you know, so I think that's
they're not Rob Perry's who are going to blow the company up.
It's sort of about capital preservation, and, you know, you can compound significantly if your capital's there, but if you take too many hits to your capital, you're compounding from a much lower base.
Yes. Okay, brilliant. No, thanks for that, Leon. And those two have both been, have they been your biggest winners this year?
Yeah. They've been my stock selections in the stock challenge competition that's run every year. You'll see that, you know, they reflect my underlying portfolio, so they're my first, and it really was my second biggest position. It's still in my top 10, but it has dropped.
Yeah, well done on both. And I mean, it's your quality at reasonable price, Quark strategy, clearly is something that works very well. Okay, we probably don't have much more time left, do we? There were three others you wanted to more briefly mention, I think. So shall we move on to those?
Okay, so shall we talk about Empresaria?
This is a small staffing company, ticker EMR, market cap 35 million.
And this is a very different type of company. You know, it's not I wouldn't call it a Quark stock. It's in recruitment, and it's a much lower margin, profit margin business as a result. I mean, they talk about they have operating margins of 3-4%, that kind of level. I knew the founder of Empresaria. He had a dream of creating a business modelled on the company Mighty, the big business services group that's a FTSE 250 company. And under that model, the thinking was to create lots of businesses where employees and managers would hold equity in the underlying business. So rather than necessarily having group employee ownership or management ownership, the ownership would be focused on the relevant subsidiaries.
So are you saying that there would be large minority interest then in the account?
That's right. It worked really well in Mighty. It worked less well in Empresaria. And I think part of the reason for that is that they went global and they tried to create this concept globally, and they had too many different brands. And I think that weakened the whole model. They also got into different types of recruitment, sort of low quality and high quality. And I think that it never really worked as well.
And they took on too much debt.
But that may have been the consequence of not getting the model just right. And so back in 2007, you know, the economy was going along well. The shares were up at 181. However, they came all the way back to about 17 pence in October 2011.
Yeah.
I was fortunate of picking them up in October 12 at 23 pence.
Oh, well done, yes.
They're now 79p. But the great thing with this one is that the company's only trading on a forward PE of 8.2.
It is, but when you adjust for the debt, it's probably about 12, isn't it? I mean, I think this one's it's priced about right, I reckon, this one. But
I disagree. I mean, if you look at the EV, the enterprise value to EBITDA, so you take your debt and add the equity and then divide by EBITDA, it's a metric often used in sort of private equity transactions. You're looking at an EV to EBITDA ratio of 6.10, which is not in any way demanding. And if you look at it on a price to free cash flow basis, it's around 10 times. So again, you know, I think there's more to go with this one. I think that whilst the debt has come down significantly, I remember both you and I worrying about the levels of debt. They were
it's manageable now, isn't it? It's not crisis levels of debt at all like it was.
And
I agree.
And the other nice thing about them is that the original founder was a great visionary, but he has moved on. And they've got a really good management team in place. The CEO is one of these guys that gets things done. He may not be, you know, the greatest presenter in the world, but he just does the job. And
you're the second person today who said exactly that to me. You know, when you meet him, you might think, oh, you know, not the slickest of presenters by any means, but a very, very good manager. And I'd rather have that than someone who's brilliant at PowerPoint presentations, but, you know, doesn't know his arse from his elbow in terms of actually running the business.
So I've got some confidence here. You know, it's, as I said, it's not a co-op stock, but I think, you know, I think there's more to go here. You know, I think they presented, I think you were in the audience a few months or so ago.
I was,
came over quite well.
And I bought some at 56p a while ago, because to me then it really was significant. It was obviously too cheap at that level, but I sold out, you know, 20-30% higher, but I just think it's probably about right now. But I'll look at it again. You know, if you think it's cheap, then, you know, it's worth looking at. So.
Well, I reckon more to go. I could see £1.20 on this one. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's not much of a dividend yield. The dividend is only 0.9%, which is often a problem with companies with relatively high levels of debt, isn't it? So it's again, it's something to factor in. I think.
But I think part of the problem is that they have to buy back that they buy out the minority interests as well.
Oh, I see.
So,
right,
you know, the cash tends to be focused at expansion and then buying these minority interests from the people they co-founded these businesses with. But what I like about it is that it did survive the recession, and part of that was down to the model that it has. That it was falling back on the entrepreneurship and the people
owning
the
managers.
So I like that culture.
I do, and with people businesses like recruitments or PR companies or marketing companies, it really is all about the people. So if they have a minority stake of ownership, they're not going to bugger off to a competitor or set up on their own, are they? So that's a positive thing. Okay. Probably ought to move on unless you've got any... Have you got any final... net tangible asset value is negative. That was the only other thing I noticed when I looked at Empresaria. That wasn't overly keen on.
Yeah, but, you know, it's probably... Yeah, you know, I'm not... I don't tend to focus so much on the balance sheet other than insolvency, because I believe that I'm much more about interest in the returns they're getting on their tangible assets. In the case of those co-op stocks, it can be significant. You know, this isn't a buy and hold forever stock. You know, it's just...
It isn't.
No, it isn't. It hasn't got bad quality, you know, thing, but I think there is more to go here.
More scope for a re-rating. Okay, brilliant. Do you want to do Victrex next, maybe?
Okay, just a quick one on Victrex. This is a...
Let me just do the ticker. Oh, sure. So it's VCT, and the market cap is 1.6 billion at the current share price of £18.92. Right, over to you.
Okay. I think it's up on where it was when we spoke last year. I can't remember exactly where it was. I think around £15 or £16.
Yeah, it went right up and then down again. In the last few weeks, it shot up, hasn't it? So it's well,
it went up £21 and back down.
That sounds about right.
Where are we on? So, I think this time last year it was around £15.50. Went up to £21.
Okay, so about 20% up, 20-25% up.
And that's partly the reason for the pullback. Probably twofold. You'll recall last year I was talking about how much they'd put aside for investing. I think they'd spent around £100 million on developing further capacity. And if you look at their results in the last year or two, revenues have shot up significantly.
And what does it do again, this company?
It makes a polymer which can be used in various industries, and therefore in some ways it's very well, because it's quite that its customers range from the oil and gas sector to the medical sector. It creates some balance. So, you know, at the moment they're suffering a bit because of the oil and gas sector's pulled back.
Oh, I see.
But they're benefiting, for instance, in consumer electronics. That's been the big growth area. So they've had this big increase that they just produce these pellets, which then go off to their customers. And their volumes are up significantly, up 19% on the prior year. That hasn't translated into significant increases in sales. In Q4, for instance, sales were up just 6.2%. And that's part of the reason for this is the changing mix. So the consumer electronics has risen, but it's less profitable than, for instance, I imagine the oil and gas work was. So what we're saying here is, the business demonstrating strength and durability. However, you know, ideally you'd want to be seeing the top line grow a lot more. They have had some currency headwinds. But on this one, I'm happy to be there. It's a company that generates very high operating margins in excess of 40%.
I know, I saw that, 41% operating margin, which is astonishingly high. But,
you know, the kind of thing I like, you know, at this current share price, it's not a screaming buy. You know, I'd like to see some evidence there of improvements in the oil and gas sector, maybe a reversal of those currency headwinds, and more progress in the electronics sector, just to see that sort of operating margin begin to sort of move ahead to reflect that growth in revenues.
And there's a 3.2% dividend yield as well.
That's
which
good,
is worth having, isn't it?
Again,
Have you held that continuously throughout the year then?
Yes, I've still got it in my portfolio. I haven't sold anything. In fact, I added around £18 or £19 a while back.
Right, okay, brilliant. And then finally, probably the most controversial stock. Now, I noticed this one's dropped sharply today, possibly across. I should say the name, XL Media, ticker XLM. Which is, I looked at this one a while ago, but maybe you can tell us a bit more about this one, but I'm not that familiar with it.
Yes, so what it does is that it describes itself as an ad tech business, and it's chosen to focus on the most lucrative aspect of the kind of ad tech space, and that's the gambling market. And essentially it uses its skills, both in producing websites, that direct traffic, and also in its ability to utilize Google AdWords to drive business towards gambling websites. And it receives payment for that, either a revenue share or an upfront payment when people sign up to these websites. As you said, it has, you know, it's controversial. It's not an area that you'd want to get into if you were running a church fund. I've met management here. I do like them. I think they're really good. Very high operating margins, again, you know, historically around 30%. High returns on capital around 23%. P ratio after today's drop looks around about 10.6, but that drops away. They released some interims a few weeks ago, which were very good. Up significantly, although I think there was a currency hedge benefit there of around $2 million, which helped. But, you know, the business is very cash generative. They pay out half their profits in dividends. Again, another thing I like, a forward yield here for 16 of around 4.4%. Why did they go down today? Well, XL Media are being treated in the same way as certain other ad tech businesses, and I'm thinking here particularly those that direct traffic to or take content, video content, and attach adverts to those content and try and generate revenues from that. So there's a company which released appalling figures today. I think you covered it in your...
I did. It's AdGorithms, it's called.
That's
it was floated by Librem in June this year, and it's put out a catastrophic profit warning today, 4 months later, which, I mean, is just a joke. Yeah. Now, I think it's to do with ad blocking. I'm not sure.
That's right.
But they said that the ad, you know, ad serving, or whatever you call it, market is in, basically, they said the market's in chaos, but they didn't really explain why. And I think it's ad blocking software, because more people are using that, which must surely kill the whole... I mean, that's why I just don't touch this sector at all, for that reason. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Leon?
Well, I mean, I don't think, I'm very happy to be corrected, I don't think that Excel Media use those approaches to getting traffic. So, you know, they'll produce a whole lot of poker websites providing information that gets them... I presume up on Google rankings, and they make sure that their sites that are compliant with what Google wants, and through that they drive traffic to websites. That's just part of their business, and as I said, they use Google AdWords, which is a very hard way of making money. I was a bit skeptical when I first met them. I wasn't convinced they would be able to utilize Google in that way. I thought all the profits with Google AdWords ultimately just went to Google, but they've demonstrated that they're very, very clever technologists, and they spent a lot of money developing a platform to optimize their bidding strategies and optimize the websites that they use. So I don't think they're using the same technologies that algorithms. I think there's another Israeli company, MatterMe, or someone that uses a similar space to algorithms. And of course, this is a space that is a bit similar to our old friends at Blinks. Do you remember those guys?
I do remember Blinks. They put out a statement today, didn't they? Saying 7 million EBITDA loss in H1, big cash pile though. But, you know, they're hoping to reach break-even. So, I mean, basically their business model's broken, and they're trying to see if they can find a new one, aren't they?
Well, Tom Winifred did a great job in exposing Blinks and the approach that they take.
Professor Edelman. We better not talk about that, and we'll give Roger Lawson an aneurysm.
So, anyway, I lost money on Blinks, I didn't rely on my instincts, which was... I wasn't positive about management. I didn't quite trust them. I didn't completely understand the technology, and I paid the appropriate price for my...
Your folly.
My folly. But you can't complain if it's your own folly, as long as you learn from your mistakes.
And you do so well on most of your stocks, I suppose the odd loser isn't really going to touch the side, is it? So, yeah.
It's always painful, though, isn't it? But I don't think Excel Media, you know, there's a different type of people. I mean, I was introduced to them through their house broker. I know some background about the people involved, and, you know, I've met management. I like them. I think they're good people, bright, and very market orientated. I can't say with absolute certainty that they don't use clever techniques to drive traffic. And obviously, people who are not keen on the gambling industry won't want to touch this one at all. But, you know, from the point of view of buying cash flow and buying earnings growth at 10 times earnings, you know.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the numbers look very attractive if earnings are sustainable. And that's a big question mark, isn't it? But, okay, so you're sticking with Excel Media for the time being, aren't you?
Yes, I mean, I'd agreed to speak on them before I'd even noticed that they were... taking a hammering today, I'm going to stick my neck out, and we can pick up on this next time I do an interview with you, and I'm going to say that this is probably a good entry point, but please do your research.
At what level? They're 67, aren't they?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I haven't got it in front of me. Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, that's good. Okay, Leon, we better, I know you've got a dash, so any closing remarks? Anything?
Just have a nice weekend, and...
I'm off to the
pub
very
much for the opportunity.
No, it's great. I mean, I absolutely love your interviews, Leon, so have you back, you know, as often as you want to update on stocks that you like. So, yeah, brilliant.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Thanks, Leon. We'll wrap it up there. Cheers. Cheers, man.
Bye.
And you. Bye.